Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. I'm Rob, the founder.
And I'm Sherry, the clinical psychologist. And we've come together to help founders and their families stay sane while starting up.
Each week, we'll talk about different ways to work well, stay emotionally and physically healthy, and stay connected to the people that you care about. So when I first learned there's a book that contains, kind of distills the knowledge that we as humans, or at least in the Western world, know about human psychology, and it basically lists out all of the ailments and abnormalities and, I don't know, maybe some normalities of the psychological world knows about.
No normalities. It's a medical dictionary for mental illness.
All right. So it's called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, DSM. And the fifth one just came out, right? DSM-5?
About a year ago,
yeah. Year or two. When I first learned that that existed, it kind of blew my mind. Just that someone, I mean, it makes sense, right? It's like having a medical manual, but I mean, I've kind of read through pieces of it and it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating kind of catalog of all of the different ways that humans can break down psychologically, like emotionally, cognitively, behaviorally.
And most psychologists or psychiatrists would have this book on their shelf, I'd imagine.
Right? Oh, yeah. It's sort of required reading for anyone in the mental health field. And it's how we get reimbursed from insurance and make a diagnosis.
You have to say it's like this DSM category or
sure.
Whatever.
There's a number that goes along with
code. DSM code.
Yep.
And so our topic today is talking about chaos versus rigidity. And how does that tie into this book?
Well, I was reading a book a while ago. I talked about this actually in one of my microconf talks within the last couple of years. The book that I was reading is called How to Stay Sane by Philippa Perry. And it's part of the School of Life series of books, which I think are very interesting set of books. But in her book, she talks about how basically all of the diagnoses that are contained in the DSM can be kind of put in one category or another. They can be put in the category of over rigidity or overly chaotic feelings or behavior.
And there are hundreds of diagnoses,
yes,
right?
Hundreds.
Several hundred. And so she categorized them into these two things.
And I thought that was really interesting because as somebody who uses that book a lot and has studied it academically, and there are lots of different kinds of problems that people can encounter. And when those problems occur in a pattern, then they fit into a category and there's a diagnosis that goes with it. But to so succinctly put them into two different categories, kind of on a continuum, two opposite ends of a continuum, I thought was a really kind of brilliant way to summarize how mental health breaks down. That you can go too far in the rigidity direction, or you can go too far in the chaos direction. And I love the simplicity of that because, you know, basically the goal is to stay somewhere in the middle. And that's just a really nice way to talk about well-being that's not overly pathological.
Well, someone who likes binary, ones and zeros, this dichotomy fits my line of thinking very well. I do not like hundreds of choices. I like two of them. Although, as we'll discover, it's really not either or, right? It's trying to find out on that continuum. Let's say chaos is all the way to the left, and that might be a bipolar disorder, as an example, or borderline personality disorder, or something that's very extreme, that's a very disruptive addiction, like hardcore addiction. That might be a chaos on end. And then on the other end, with the rigidity, it breaks down with, like, hardcore OCD.
Anything where there's a tremendous amount of anxiety and agoraphobia, fear of being out of one's house, basically, kind of afraid, being afraid of the world.
Right. And so while most of our listeners probably don't have one of those extremes, we all fall somewhere along the spectrum, right?
Yeah.
And it's super important, I think, like we've talked about, to know yourself and to figure out where you fall on the spectrum, why that's important, and then to look at that and say, okay, I know this. What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses based on where I fall in this chaos rigidity spectrum?
And I think what's helpful about having two ends of a spectrum is that in order to maintain some balance or find some middle ground, you can use some counterbalancing strategies. So if you are somebody who tends to be a little bit more rigid, you have pretty set patterns that you adhere to with some intense commitment. If you're somebody who really doesn't like any kind of surprise or change and is maybe on some levels really concerned about the future, interested in controlling everything that is controllable and really kind of irritated when things are not controllable. That might be someone who's a little bit more on the rigid spectrum. And I won't make any grand generalizations about what kind of technical founders might fall in that category.
Like all of us? Just say all of us. Because if you come up as a software developer or even just like an intense salesperson, you know, I'm thinking of like a Steli FD or something, you probably have your bit of a control freak. I mean, that's just what we do. We want to control the process. We want to, especially with code, you need to control everything. Because anytime anyone else does something, it gets screwed up. That's like the mental model is like, you have to control it. And so then now I'm going to come start a company with all these loose ends, black and whites, all this stuff. Like, it's really hard. It's the biggest thing that I see new founders, especially new technical founders, struggle to get over is letting some of the control go, whether it's to outsource support or outsource five lines of code to someone else or allow customers to do something you're not comfortable with. You know, I mean, there's just all this stuff that I think technical founders especially fall on that rigidity side.
Right, because software and the coding piece of it is so scriptable, so controllable. But of course, anything that has to do with humans, whether that's consumer behavior or the behavior of another business, is not controllable.
I could imagine that being a founder. Specifically, since we're, you know, Zen founder, we're talking about founders that are coming more from kind of like a creative background, I would think, as I'm kind of generalizing across the people I've known. The folks that have come up through design school, been a solid designer, but think more, a little more in that, the right brain area. Is that right? I always get left
out. Yeah, this is your idea generator, your passion project, your maybe very charismatic, like just going a million miles a minute and full of ideas and full of passion, might struggle a little bit more with follow through, might struggle to put some of those systems in place that the more rigid folks are really good at systems, but your more chaotic person may need to rely on other people to help put systems in place. So that chaotic personality, again, has the strengths of being somebody who can be charismatic and really compelling and again, just generating all of these fabulous ideas, but may struggle with implementation.
Right. Implementation, I would think, and oversight. I think that you might have no problems. I'm going to outsource everything to all these developers and these support people and never check up that anything's getting done right and hiring a team and just kind of letting them run and not managing them. I mean, this is an extreme case, but that's, I think, the chaotic side is just not having that control. And then obviously the rigid side would be like perhaps at worst like a micromanager or someone who can never hire anyone because they can't give anything up.
Yeah, so I think it's really important for founders to really do some self-reflection and figure out kind of where they are on this spectrum. I mean, earlier in our conversation before we started recording, you talked about type A. Mm-hmm. And type A person might sort of fit with that rigid person. So again, there are strengths that go with either of these personality portfolios, but there are, of course, weaknesses too. So understanding where you fall allows you to use your strengths well without having a blind spot to the weaknesses that go with them.
So I feel like I know and kind of have always known where I fall on the spectrum, just because I like things to fall in a certain way. And I'm not on an extreme to the point of needing to...
you don't have a number from my book.
Exactly. But I like things to be a certain way. And I like to certainly have control. And I like things to get done right. And I like to get done in the way that I believe is right. But if someone is unsure, how could they go about figuring that out? Or is being unsure, does that logically mean they maybe are in between the two, that they're already the perfect balance? I'm just kidding.
I mean, certainly most of the people who are listening are going to be in the middle, mm-hmm. are not going to be near the tail end of this bell curve. You know, I think a good thing to do is think about what happens to you when you're under stress. So when you're under stress, do you stay up at night making spreadsheets or do you lose everything? Like, do you lose your keys? Do you lose your wallet? When the pressure's on, do you sort of fray at the edges, so to speak, versus clamping down control?
Yeah, I like that. Thinking about like when the pressure's on, right? It's kind of like evaluating your own behavior and your actions when it counts to try to look at maybe where you fall on the spectrum.
And I think it's also a good idea to ask the people around you, your partner, your sibling, your
mastermind group,
group probably has a sense of what you,
you do. Do I follow through really well? And am I too controlling? Or do I kind of let too many things go and not follow up on things and let the chaos take me?
And we've known about this dynamic in our relationship for a long time. I am traditionally known as the idea person, whereas you are traditionally known as the implementer. We're still in Europe right now, and we're seeing that pattern play out in lots of ways in our partnership, where I'll sort of say, hey, there's a castle, let's go that way, without much idea of how to get there or what implementation will require. But I have a good idea, and it's based on passion and interest.
Right. And this is a good point, like between us, because I think the marital dynamic of chaos versus rigidity could be like, if it's two chaotic people, that could obviously be bad. If it's two rigid people, that could be bad, depending on how you figured it out. And then having a balance like we do, we've just figured out how to make it work. I guess since we're opposites, maybe we could, you could be frustrated by how I always want to control things, and that I could be frustrated with how you're not, you don't nail down the specifics. But what I found, like when we're traveling, as an example, is you put together a loose itinerary of, we're going to be in Europe for 30 days. Here's some stuff. And the night before, as long as we have at least like a city name and maybe a venue, I go in and I read up on the real specifics of it. I nail down an address that I have to drive to. I try to figure out where parking will be, you know, like actually think about.
You do the nuts and bolts.
I do. And to be honest, it's kind of enjoyable for me.
Yeah,
you know, that's,
I know.
It's like writing code, right? You look at the next step and then you break it down, then you break it down. And to then figure out how we're going to get there and how we're going to do it is kind of a fun thing. Now, deciding on from these infinite possibilities of what are we going to do tomorrow, right? We could go to 100 different day trips around here. That part kills me.
Yeah, but I kind of like that part.
Yeah.
I can just jump into a guidebook or a region of the world and be excited about all of the possibilities and not have too much trouble parsing some priorities from the list. But then you do the implementing.
Right. So it actually, we've arrived at the point, and it has not always been like this, right? I mean, maybe.
No, usually there's been more conflict about it in the past.
Yep. 10 years ago. I mean, we've gotten better at it, frankly.
Totally.
We've been married 15 years now, and you kind of figure this stuff out. I think that's also interesting. I'm thinking of myself as a founder. Obviously, I'm a little more, like I said, a little more on the rigid side. I have had to make up for that because I've never had a chaotic co-founder. Right. My co-founders have always, you know, if you look at Derek, he's different like me. He's a developer, you know, or I've had no co-founder, frankly. And that means that I have to try to look to the chaotic side, because the chaotic side can be the really good ideas or the creative insights or the creative solutions to a hard problem that.
The totally out of the box thinking.
It used to be a lot harder for me. I have gotten better at it through practice. And I think that's a big thing that those, you know, technical founders need to think about listening to this. You got to work at this, because especially as the stakes get higher over the years, if you continue to grow your business, just difficult problems come up that are not natural for you to solve.
So out of the box thinking is kind of a counterbalance to rigidity, and so is emotion in some ways. I mean, just in the last couple of days, you've been having a lot of emotions or really frustrated at something that's happening related to Drip. And it takes some kind of wisdom to figure out what to do with those emotions and not stuff them down, but also not take action when you're angry and not do some sort of flaming tweet, like to just manage,
right,
to grow some skills at managing feelings that can lead to chaotic behavior if they're not checked well.
Right. And for the record, there's a competitor doing stuff that's making me mad is what's happening. Drip.
It's not Derek.
Drip itself is doing fine. Yeah. There's a competitor who's making me mad. I think as being more on the rigid side, that's easier. I tend to be less impulsive than someone who might be on the chaotic side. And I think if you find yourself more on the chaotic side, you really should be thinking about not tweeting when you're angry, not emailing when you're angry, right? That's kind of something you're naturally going to be prone to. I tend to not do that stuff. It's easy for me, but the chaos side, you're probably really creative and really good at coming up with.
But I think impulsivity is the downside of that kind of chaoticness. And that's when leaning a little bit more towards rigidity and having some systems where you say, I'm not going to tweet when I'm angry. I'm not going to make decisions when I'm tired. that you have some checks in place before a big decision so you don't impulsively, with your creativity and chaotic spirit in hand, make a mess of your life and your mm-hmm. business.
Mm-hmm. You see this in our space, in a lot of spaces. I mean, you see it on Twitter, the people who are constantly in flame wars or trying to get in fights with everybody. I mean, if we look at these two classifications, like, yeah, that person tends to kind of go off the handle on Twitter, and they obviously are more of an impulsive person, and they say what they think unfiltered, and they're probably more on the chaotic side if you were to look at how they approach things, how they think about things and their business and everything.
Yeah.
So we've talked a little bit about these two sides and how you can get an idea of maybe where you fall on these two spectrums, as well as some of the pros and cons.
And we've begun to talk a little bit about the importance of counterbalance. Like, if you know that you're someone who leans into a more rigid direction, then you either need to have a co-founder or a partner who can help you creatively and can help kind of bring some out-of-the-box thinking into your life, or you need to create space in your life to intentionally develop some of those practices or skills, whether that's using something like morning pages, which is a simple writing practice where you sit down at the beginning of the day and write for 20 minutes, take your pencil off the paper and you just write and let your brain kind of vomit out whatever it wants to say. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's really brilliant and sometimes it's like a to-do list of the day and not very brilliant or interesting, but it's a creative practice.
Or the approach that I like that you said earlier is develop a system or two. And that system could be, don't tweet or email when you're angry. Don't make decisions when you're angry. Don't make long-term decisions when you're, angry, tired, sick. There's like the list, hungry. When I was younger, I would do that. I would make these broad decisions and then whatever, you're tired. And then 2 days later, it's like, that was a terrible decision. And I don't do that anymore. It's like learning to have some rules for yourself of like when you're actually going to make decisions that are going to have a lasting impact. And both sides can use that, frankly, both the chaotic and the rigid side.
So if you're out of the box, you might need a little more structure. If you're really structured, you might need a little more flexibility and creativity, or to cultivate a little bit more flexibility and creativity.
I think it's a matter of knowing that about yourself and of saying, as you're making a decision, like, I'll go on the rigid side, why don't I want to outsource this small piece of support? Or why don't I want to outsource this code? Am I being too rigid? And it's questioning that. It's bringing it to people who can lend some insight. It becomes hard when you start questioning who you are, because then you'll question everything and you waste a bunch of time and you waste a bunch of emotional cycles. But I feel like if you haven't gotten to a point where you know who you are pretty well and you have these systems already built to kind of counterbalance, you need to spend that time. And it'll take time, maybe over 6 months or a year, of kind of grind away at it, and you're emotionally maybe doing extra cycles. But then once you have your, for me, it's having systems in place. But obviously, if you're on the chaotic side, it's probably not systems. It's probably just more having someone there as maybe a accountability or something. I think it's time well spent.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you do operate a little bit more on the chaotic side, your metric is your sense of well-being. Like, your own emotional well-being is the guide of how you're doing. Maybe more than having someone else have to take care of you and hold your hand.
Mm, that makes sense.
One thought that I had that I feel concerned or worried about some of the like hyper optimization conversation, like, again, maybe an unfair characterization, but like the Tim Ferriss crew, like, how can I optimize every aspect of my life? And that to me sounds like a recipe toward rigidity. Right? I will only eat this much in this way, or sleep this much in this way. I take this medicine to help me feel awake and this medicine to help me go to sleep. And like, it's, if you live your life like that, I would have concerns about your long-term emotional well-being based on how rigid you're holding to these sort of optimization strategies. It doesn't lend itself to these other aspects of life that we know are important, which are to accept limits or being okay with your own and other people's imperfections, being able to like forgive yourself and move on when you do fail or your optimization efforts don't yield the results that you want. So again, I'm not a student of Tim Ferriss, so I might be sort of villainizing him unnecessarily, but if your whole life is about optimization and following a pattern that you have to rigidly adhere to, I think you're missing some really important parts of life that have to do with emotional well-being.
What are those? Talk more about them.
Well, I think some that I listed, I think the reality is that you're never going to be a fully optimized person. There's always going to be one other thing or one, the shape of your nose or the smell of your breath. There's something that's not going to be good enough.
So it's not the self-management that you're concerned about. It's the, when I say self-management, I mean, some people might drink caffeine to wake themselves up in the morning and drink a glass of wine at night. And then, I don't know, what's the bulletproof coffee? And then might only start eating paleo because it does whatever. So it's not those things in particular. It's that the never ending quest for more and more optimization. Is that what you're concerned about?
Yeah. Or what do you do when your bullet coffee isn't available? Your bulletproof coffee isn't available.
Do you melt down and fall apart?
Or what do you do when you want to eat vegan, but you are invited into someone's home and they serve you a non-vegan food?
Right.
Or what do you do when, can you be flexible and roll with it? Is it just something that you're into that's important to you? Or does it define who you are in a way that
is detrimental to you functioning in society?
Yeah. Or your emotional well-being.
That it kind of wrecks it'll wreck your day or wreck your week. Almost. Yeah. You didn't use this word, but it sounds to me a little bit like when you say, what do you do when your bulletproof coffee is not available? Some people would be like, oh, that's fine. I'll just drink the regular coffee or I'll have tea or whatever. And others who are maybe addicted, right? I'm going to use that word. Is it like an addiction to where?
Or an obsession.
Obsession or an addiction. Got it. Right. It might not be physically addictive if you're so obsessed with something, anything. And we're just using bulletproof coffee as an example. This is not it. Yeah. But if you're so
obsessed. Go ahead, drink your coffee.
Yeah, yeah. But if you're so obsessed with it that it kind of takes you down if you don't have this thing, then
okay, so I guess my framework for this is the obsession that comes with an eating disorder. Hmm. So when we push it to the edges, can you lose a sense of yourself in reality if you are so obsessed and concerned with following a particular dietary plan or optimization strategy that you forget how to be a real person in the real world?
Right. Yeah, I think that's definitely something to be aware of because it's obviously become popular. I've only heard of it becoming popular since Tim Ferriss started writing books. And he's not, you used the word villainize earlier. It's not, you're not villainizing him. And I've read several of his books and stuff, but it's just the concept. It's the over-optimization or the perhaps obsession with optimizing that you're saying could be a big sign that you might err on the side of rigidity.
And it's just easy to go too far.
Yeah.
So our podcast obviously isn't about mental illness, and many of you who are listening don't necessarily struggle with mental illness. But I think when we look at the edges of where human beings begin to break down, it does give us some important information about what well-being looks like. And I think in this conversation, well-being looks like balance. It looks like flexibility. It looks like systems. It looks like organization. It looks like self-discipline. But it also looks like some respect and acknowledgement of emotion and ability to be creative and flexible without fully falling into chaos. So as you kind of think about yourself and where you go during stress or where you go when you're really under a lot of pressure, just notice you tend to be more rigid or more chaotic and then plan accordingly.
Yeah, it's a lot about knowing yourself.
And being honest about the strengths and weaknesses that you bring to your life.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder.
We'll be back next week with another conversation about how to enjoy a little bit more Zen in your startup life.